podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Adam Smith, with Harriet Pryor and with John Gibbons. Your festive period Tour Live. I'm intrigued to see what the numbers will be like in terms of people watching it live. One, it's not the time we said it would always be. Two, it is the gap between Christmas and New Year. And three, I don't know what we're up against, but if there isn't a really good film in black and white on BBC Two, the BBC are doing Christmas very, very wrong indeed. Hopefully you've chosen us over Kind Hearts and Coronets. I have got, as I said before, Adam Smith. I've got Harriet Pryor. I've got John Gibbons, and we will move ourselves smoothly into Tour. Talking about the game against Aston Villa, that's coming up in a second or two. Then we've got Gary Judge from Access Sport, if you listen to this as a podcast, talking about the partnership that they're entering into with the Anfield Wrap and the whys and the wherefores and so on and so forth. Andy Heaton there just behind me, if you're watching this as a video live, man off stage, moving all the way along. Excellent stuff there from Andy. And coming up in part four, or part three more accurately, of this, we're going to be talking about the game coming up against Leicester City and Liverpool's signing of Cody Gakpo. Gakpo is on his way. You'll know when there'll be Gakpo chat if you're watching it live, because that will be on your screen. Excellent, excellent indeed. Like to always play with the tools. This is what happens, John, when I get to be the producer on Tour Live. I get to mess about a little bit and I enjoy it immensely.
I mean, we can't ever have enough of Rob Gutman with Gunnosaurus. It's an iconic image of two greats of the game.
Two legends.
Two greats of the game.
Two legends. Two people who will be remembered in years to come. For the good work they did, not the bad.
Yeah, well, no, very much so. Very much so. I would like to see Rob Gutman in minute silences. Like Gunnosaurus, to see how Sam Morose and ridiculous he can look.
Yeah, very.
What happened with Gunnosaurus? Because didn't they try and make him redundant?
I think.
Yeah, and the backlash was too great, and Mesut Ozil got involved, and the whole thing was a palaver.
Oh, yeah, of course, he offered to pay Gunnosaurus' wages.
He offered to give Gunnosaurus Ozil's wages.
That wasn't even the maddest thing that happened in that time. Wow. Far from it.
But if you look at the whole history of Gunnosaurus, you know, it's littered with incident. It is worth saying. At the moment, Gunnosaurus feels as though he may be clattering towards lifting his first Premier League title as a dinosaur in there. That could be happening in the world of football. But what did happen in the world of football for certain on Boxing Night was that Liverpool went to Aston Villa at 1-3-1. And Asma Smith, I'll start with you on this. The thing that most pleased me was that whilst Aston Villa tried to start fast, Liverpool ultimately started faster and got the job done before half time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we looked very good initially. I was at my cousin's for a Boxing Day thing that we do every year, and the match, I'd put the match on in the other room, got it all set up ready to go, and then we were doing a game thing before that reached up basically to half past, and when I went through to the other room, the telly had turned itself off, even though I had it all set up. So I needed to turn it back on, get it all ready. And by the time it came back on, I just missed the replays of the opening goal. So it was that cruel, cruel timing where nothing worked out for me initially. But I was able to watch from then on. And I was a little bit concerned about how open it looked, if I'm going to be slightly negative about
it. It was quite basketball, wasn't it, first 15-20?
Really, yeah, it really was. And I was... I think I had mentally prepared for that not to be the case, because I kind of was like, well, that's what Jürgen's going to have been, you know, working on for the past, like, whatever, couple of weeks with the players. He's going to be working on getting that defensive solidity back in place and blah, blah, blah. And then they basically just cut us open repeatedly, and Ollie Watkins looked like the best player on the planet.
A point of order, Ollie Watkins might be the best player on the
fair,
planet.
Yeah, fair. Sorry. I get the feeling you keep putting stuff up on the screen, Neil, but I've turned Kind Hearts and Coronets on in the background. So no idea what's going on.
Alec Guinness Masterclass.
Yeah, brilliant. One of the best black and white films of all time. Anyway, back to the point. So I was concerned by that. But at the end of the day, we got that second goal that really made me kind of go, okay, well, you know, I feel a lot more relaxed now.
feeling a lot more relaxed now, Harrier Pryor. The second goal did do that. I think what was interesting when I looked back at the numbers of the game was that Villa didn't have a shot from the 15th minute until the 45th, you know, just on the race chart there. So there was a feeling that this is just a little bit open. And it actually reminded me a little bit of a classic Liverpool away performance 2018 to 2020. And what I mean by that is, I think in our minds now, when we look back, everything always went swimmingly and we very rarely had to suffer and we very rarely had to hang in on games. But that doesn't quite sort of bear up to the fact of what a lot of those away games were like. There were times where we came under the cosh, times where we missed chances, Sheffield United away being a really good example, which is settled by one late Gini Wijnaldum goal that sneaks under the goalkeeper, where we missed three really, really good chances. Sheffield United had some really, really good chances. The game felt like it was in the balance. And there's a number of those games in that period. And it felt a little bit more like one of them. What I thought we lacked in the second half was just a bit of confidence to see out the difficult period. That's the trait of a side that's only won one away league game this season. And in the cold light of day, trust me, not in the ground where I was having kittens, but in the cold light of day, I thought, well, yeah, they've only won one away league game all season. Why should they be unbelievably confident?
Yeah, I think you both talked about being, you know, being nervous in the ground and being concerned at home. I actually wasn't particularly concerned because I thought, like you've mentioned there, that first half kind of just felt like what we've been doing in seasons beforehand, where it was just going back to basics, trusting the risk versus reward system and just knowing that things would work out all right. And yes, that left spaces, but it's always left spaces and we've always managed to concede goals in those areas and those things have happened and we've still gone on and won the game. And I think that was, that first half in particular just felt like going back to that, and it wasn't too much for concern if Ollie Watkins was maybe getting space in areas that we didn't like so much. And that ultimately in the second half, because I didn't think we came out strong enough, maybe lacked a bit of confidence, like you mentioned, then ended up in us conceding a goal. But in the first half in particular, I wasn't very concerned about that because I just thought everything looked a lot better, particularly in you know, respect to the Manchester City game, where I felt like our press was off, everything that we seemed to be working towards in that pre-season and getting that intensity back was just a little bit missing. And then, what are you putting on the screen here? And then in the Aston Villa game in that first half, I thought the press was better. I thought the high line was working better. I felt like we were in control, and having Virgil back in and leading that back line seemed to, everything just seemed to be clicking a bit better. And we came out and we got the first goal in the first 5 minutes, and with confidence grew from there. I think maybe, like you mentioned, that second half and the idea that we have only won one away game all season maybe got in the heads a little bit. And that's why the changes were really smart. And I was sort of made the mistake of going on Twitter after the changes were made and people were like, why are these players coming on? You know, why are you taking off the captain and all of those things? And then actually they managed to provide some fresh legs, provide a bit of new confidence and change the game and make sure that we came away with the 3 points.
Just on that, John, I really want to be clear about this. The manager really got his changes right. And it was, they were the sorts of changes, as Harriet said there, that if the game then goes against Liverpool, he gets absolutely slaughtered for. So I do want to just sort of take a second here and point out and emphasise, you know, often subs don't work. They are a gamble for a variety of reasons. He made his gamble, and I think he got his changes right.
Well, it's there statistically that since Jürgen Klopp took over as Liverpool manager, Liverpool have scored more goals from the bench than any other team. And so he's consistently doing good things from the bench. And when he started, he didn't really have one. it was Stephen Kulker up front for the last 10 and see what happens. And so there's been lots of periods in our time supporting Liverpool fans where we haven't really liked benches, but you know, Liverpool have scored more goals since Jürgen Klopp come in from the bench than any other football team. And so he is getting them right a lot. And you know, sometimes managers will do some things we don't necessarily agree with, and rather than trying to get our heads around them, we'll just get cross, and then obviously if it doesn't go right, we'll say he should have done what I did. First of all, it's a bit of a lottery anyway. You've got no idea what this pick's going to do, who you're throwing on. And that's from Stefan Bacicic, a youngster, to James Milner, who's Mr. Dependable, who me and you saw put in the worst substitute performance of all time at Goodison Park.
Absolutely.
So you know, it's not even, you know, it's an experience thing here. It's just sometimes we're all shit at footy, even the very best of us. And sometimes we'll have a day where everything we hit goes in. And so there is an element of luck. The managers just need to trust their judgment, trust how they feel of the game. And that's why they get so close. It's in many ways a terrible place to watch a game of football. I always like it when they get sent off and go up in the stands. It happened this year with Clough. He's like, you fucking see all sorts from there, you know. And you're like, yeah, it's a great view. great view of the match. And you're like, well, why don't you stay up there? And he's like, oh, no, get me down there because you know, although they'll miss sort of certain things, and you know, we'll maybe appreciate certain things as much. You know, the feel of a football game, being able to feel like you can influence it, you know, they get much more from there. And so, yeah, I was a bit surprised by the subs, but he absolutely buries it.
The other thing that he does when he's burying it with those subs, John, is I think it's a reminder where he's between his piano carriers and his piano players. It's interesting to me that Nunez basically goes off for the round of applause and for the hug. It felt like him and Salah does the full game. Nunez does very much all but the full game. And it's a real reminder, again, to sort of hark back to the successful periods, especially successful periods under Klopp. You know, there'd be a lot of games where Mane and Salah in particular would just do the full 90 and other players would go off. But part of the reason why those players are going off is because of all the work they're doing, serving up for Salah and Mane, so they can focus on doing the sprints that they need to do repeatedly over the course of the game. I thought there was a real return to, I can see who's carrying this piano and I can see who's playing it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think also to, you know, going into that, we need to remember that, you know, all these players and all the squads have had very different build-ups to the first league game back. So, you know, I was thinking about it a little bit the other day with Pep Guardiola's mad comments about Calvin Phillips, and thinking
just
like,
so deeply out of order. By
I
the
know,
way,
I know it's ridiculous. He's like he's mad, but people just have had, you know, it sort of fits into three camps, doesn't it? There's the people who don't go, who've had these sorts of training camps and Liverpool have been out to Dubai and stuff like that and have had this sort of build-up. And then there's the people who went and played a lot who were arguably, you know, from what I've seen, playing the best football so far. You know, from what I've seen from Premier League teams, the people who played in the World Cup but went out in about quarters look the best at the moment. But then there's these other ones who go and don't play but have done like shit training, yep, basically. Who and Trent falls into that. And Trent came in and played really well. But you know, they are sort of, you know, being a bit conscious that he spent basically a month standing there being a B team. I don't know, sort of tracking Raheem Sterling and training.
He was ill as well, though, wasn't he? That's what the manager said.
Yeah, and then he took
someone off because they had like a cold or flu or whatever, so he didn't want them to play the full game.
And there's loads of illness knocking about. And so all this kind of points into, we always say the manager's got more information than us, but in this particular case, he's got well more. He's got loads and loads more, and so they're making the decisions. And also, we all forget, which we're allowed to, that there's another game on the 30th and another game on 2nd, because we're in the moment and we're supporters and we're doing that. Whereas he can't forget, it's his job.
He can't forget. Other one I want to sort of point out, Adam, and I think it was happening before the World Cup break. I think he's especially good, for instance, at Tottenham Hotspur. I was delighted with every aspect of Andy Robertson. I think he ends up with a remarkably tough job because in the first half, it's all attack from him because Liverpool are on top of the way in which they are. Second half, he ends up with more Leon Bailey to deal with than I'd like. You know, I think Bailey looks like a really good player, and I suspect he'll do well for Villa between now and May. He plays very much in Andy Robertson's area. McGinn comes over to that side as well. They're trying to push a bit of an overload around Robertson. I think in the end, he deals with it manfully and just gets up and down that flank and offers such an outlet all the time for Liverpool. I thought he was, again, in the cold light today, watching the game back, I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, I thought he was a bit sloppy against City in the League Cup. I didn't love it. I was told by others he was the best player in our team, so what do I know, which is a standard refrain. But I didn't love him, but I thought he was, very much back to sort of his best. There was one point where he had a shot for absolutely no reason that under my rules of football would have meant he was immediately substituted.
I remember that one.
But the manager obviously has got more sense than I do and kept him on. And you know, look, he's a very good player. And I think it's one of those things. There's all the talk of the likes of Salah and Haaland, who obviously, you know, people are saying, oh, they'll have a point to prove, or they haven't been at the World Cup, so they'll be refreshed and all that sort of thing. And you forget about the likes of Robertson. No one's sort of saying Andy Robertson will have a point to prove, or, you know, whatever, or he's refreshed, but he will be. Because part of the thing about before the World Cup was he looked shattered because he's played a billion games, and a lot of them were high stakes games, because even when he went away with Scotland, when they were trying to get into the World Cup, there were still high stakes games, and he was just shattered. So I think he's one of those players that really needed time off, hasn't had to do what Trent's had to do, as you say, would go away and be trained by, frankly, a moron. So he's been able to kind of rest, come back and be able to get some, you know, training with one of the best managers in the world. And lo and behold, he looks better for it. Yeah, you know, he was great with, and the defensive unit simultaneously looked great and also looked massively open at times, which I can't. When it was,
I thought the defenders really well. I thought the defenders really well individually, and there was just an issue around what the collective were doing.
Yes, which I think that latter part is why I was a little bit annoyed, confused, concerned, pick your word, because of how long, you know, because Klopp's been away working with them all, and I kind of thought that figuring out the system would be one of the chief things he'd been working on. And maybe he has, and they just haven't got it, but they're all still doing what they do as individuals to make it work. I don't know. But yeah, going back to your original point, yeah, Robertson was great.
I think what helped Robertson, Harriet, and I think that as a fan base, and I mean, I include people in the ground, I include people online, I include people I talk to in pubs, I think we've sort of lost the idea of what a placeholder in a team can do. I thought that in that context, I think Chamberlain has a really good game, in that he has a really 7 out of 10 game where he just plays the position that he needs to play, and that makes Nunez better and it makes Robertson better. Going back to my point about sort of, and Shankly's point about carrying pianos and playing pianos, that he was very much there, even though he's playing in the attack on the left-hand side of the attack, he was very much there to carry the piano, allow Nunez and Robertson the ability to excel. And that's what I think you got to see from him.
Yeah, well, I think he's not started a Premier League game in 10 months or something like that. And he comes back in and he sort of understands the assignment. And I don't think you can underestimate sort of how difficult that is for him to not want to come back in and instantly want to prove a point and have the best game of his life. I feel like he kind of settled for having a decent, average, good performance where he helped the others succeed and thrive. And he kind of had to resist the temptation on an individual level to be like, okay, I'm going to prove why I should be starting week in, week out. Because I think he kind of accepts and knows now that that's probably not realistic for him. And as a consequence, like you mentioned, I thought he had a really good performance. I thought he allowed the others to be a bit more creative. I thought he hung back in the right moments, drove forward in the right moments, knew when to sort of find a bit of pace, knew when to track back more and sort of drop into midfield when there was a more defensive duty inside for him to play. So I liked that sort of positional awareness that he seemed to show. And I think there's question marks now about whether, for especially the Leicester game coming up and then after that Brentford, he stays in that position, whether you bring Carvalho in. But for me, he sort of has that. Obviously, that experience is he's been in and around the team so long, but also maybe that physicality that someone like Carvalho lacks a little bit. But then, obviously, you don't want to keep playing, say, Chamberlain, because we know how injury prone he is. But as a single performance, something really positive and a lot to build on for that. So, yeah, I was impressed with him.
Michael Bimson there commented, let's see Thiago control the tempo and dictate the play better when we were under pressure in terms of gaining back control. Johnny was on Chamberlain's side. It was interesting the timing to go back to those substitutions. I think in terms of doing a placeholder job, I think Elliot comes on and does a really good one. It's the first time we've seen him, I think, full stop, do anything that looks like left wing. And I think he just helped his fullback and helped Liverpool get through it. I think the Thiago controlled the tempo and dictated the play. What I thought was interesting was Villa were effectively targeting the space behind Thiago. And I think that rattled him a fair bit. You know, I think there's a world where Thiago gets a platform where he can play and do that. And then there's a world where suddenly he's in a very mucky battle with John McGinn. And that was where he ended up. And I think that sort of, that made that harder for him. And then in the same way, Keita comes on, does a job, and does, you know, again, it's an understated job, keeps the ball moving, looks after the space really, really well. I thought he improved Liverpool.
Yeah, he did. What minute did Keita come on with?
It's about 60. I think the two of them come on around 60.
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell, isn't it? Sometimes sort of, you know, what changes a game. I've sort of read a couple of people say that Keita's also showed it up, and you know, I felt like, you know, that I'm not saying he didn't, but sometimes it's hard to know when, you know, what sort of
correlation
changes.
And causation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's what sort of changes. I thought, you know, they obviously came out second half really well, and you know, and then sort of punched themselves out a little bit, or Liverpool sort of got to grips, and whether that was, you know, as I say, Villa waning or what we were doing, you know, it is sometimes a little bit hard to tell, but. But, you know, that's not to disparage Keita, who I thought was perfectly fine. And I thought has looked to play quite sensibly sort of whenever he came back. I think whenever since he came back, I thought City, you know, he came on and was fairly neat and tidy. And this one and again. And it's a reminder, really, that during the back end of last season, been able to use both of them and rotate between them largely. He sort of decided he had one player between them, didn't he, the manager, towards, you know, from sort of February on, and would start Thiago more. But generally, they both got plenty of minutes and both played in the same position and both played to a really high level to the point where you felt like whoever we had there, you had a really good footballer, and that was really nice. And we haven't been able to have that. It's his first Premier League minutes all season, isn't it? Which is absolutely insane. I know we've had a month off, but it's still wild. But if we can get him fit, he says, you know,
get him in around the first team picture.
Yeah, for between the... Between now and the end of the season, like, that's some footballer, and by that, and the some footballer I mean is half Thiago, half Keita, and I'm talking about merging them in a sort of a Frankenstein way. I'm talking about, you know, the switching between them depending on freshness, you know, who we're playing and situation, like the manager did. You know, it just sort of boxes that side, and then you're able to look at the other midfield as it goes.
Absolutely. I would point out that what football matches feel like and the way in which they're played out are two really rather different things. In the first half, Aston Villa had their last shot of the first half on the 17th minute and didn't manage to get another one. And in the second half, Aston Villa had their last shot on the 61st minute until the 94th minute, when obviously Ollie Watkins, who you can't keep out the action, felt as though we needed to have his say. At that point, the game was 3-1 to Liverpool. It didn't feel like that, and the offside stuff doesn't help in terms of what it feels like across the board there. But it is worth pointing out that Aston Villa did not manage a shot of effectively the last half an hour of both halves, that one against Liverpool. It is Tor Live. It is Neil Atkinson with John Gibbons and with Adam Smith and with Harry Pryor. But earlier today, I spoke to Gary Judge about Access Sport, who are coming on board as a partner of the Anfield Wrap. If you listen to this as Tor Live, that is with you now. So, across the next 3 months, the Anfield Wrap is going to be in partnership with Access Sport Colleges. Joining me now is Gary Judge to introduce the idea of what Access Sport do. You'll have heard Gary in the past doing bits and pieces for us, talking about Everton from his Across the Park podcast. But from there, we've got to know Gary, and we've got to know what he does with Access Sport. There's someone we're really, really pleased to be partnering with. So Gary, first and foremost, for our listeners, to introduce for the first time, what do Access Sport Colleges do? Where are they based? What is the mission of the Access Sport College outlook?
Big question, yeah. But we're a national sports education provider. So for anyone who is leaving school at the age of 16, typically, and maybe considering sixth form or a college, if you're interested in studying sport or going into the sports industry, whether that be coaching, sports science, physiotherapy, sports media, then we'd like you to consider us. We are national based, so most parts of the country we cover. Very heavy concentration around Liverpool and the Northwest, but we go all the way down to Norwich, all the way up to Newcastle. So we're a national sports training provider.
When you say about it being a qualification, it's important to sort of point out that it's a serious qualification. It's not sort of a lightweight qualification. Yeah. It's something that you're looking to do in order to be part of the sector, to prepare young people for the next phase of their life. It's a significant thing.
Absolutely, yeah. So we say quite a lot, it's about the course, not the qualification. The qualifications themselves are the equivalent to 3A levels. So we typically work with level 3 students and we aim to get them the equivalent in old money of 3A levels. So regardless of what their next step is after us, they can go on to university and access most university courses. But our intention is to try and prepare them more than anything else via the course for the industry and the rigours of the industry.
When you've been looking to create this philosophy, because this you've been doing this now for a number of years, you've been looking to find the way to get some core principles into the staff, into environment, but mostly into the learners. The learners are the forefront of this, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And in terms of core principles or values, they are typically the values that most employers look for. You know, reliability, if you like, and that comes in the form of punctuality, you know, good attendance, professionalism. But more than anything else, we're trying to develop good people. You know, if you've got whatever industry you're going to work in, you know, and if you're a parent or if you're an adult and you're looking at young people, I think the main thing you want is a good person, someone who's able to communicate, and that's what we're trying to embody into our courses. Good, you know, communication, professionalism, and reliability.
The other thing you're looking to do as well is to develop pathways for young Absolutely. People. So the pathways can be in coaching, they can be in public service and sports science and sports media. This is a massive part of what this course is about. We're going to be talking more through this partnership about those pathways on the Anfield Wrap, but can you just sort of give us a flavour as to how you see them reaching out for the learners?
Yeah, how the pathways work effectively is that it's really confusing coming out of school because you literally, you know, you sit in English, then you go to math, then you go to science. And although a lot of young people might be frustrated by that organisation and that, you know, that kind of regimented system, sorry, it is a comfort for a lot of students. They come out and they're looking for that direction. So a lot of students who come to us come because they want to, you know, they want to play and be active and they want to do the practical elements. But every single day they'll be asked, you know, what are you looking to do next? So what we try and do is to put our students as early as possible into a pathway. So like you said, those pathways could be sports coaching. You know, that allows students to go and get work experience in schools and in leisure centres and holiday camps to try and improve communication and so on. It could be teaching, which works very closely alongside coaching. It could be sports science, which could be analysis, physiotherapy, personal training, something like that. Public services has always been a very solid pathway for us. A lot of our students like being in teams. They like playing football. And as such, they develop a lot of skills that, you know, are valuable in the public services, whether it be the army, the fire service, the police, the ambulance service, and sports media. You know, it is a very popular pathway. You know, we're sitting here, we're involved, you're involved. That's your bag, sports media. But a lot of our young people don't realise that a lot of their skills that they've acquired in this modern generation are very useful to sports media, particularly if they've got that knowledge to back it up.
When you say before about firstly being across the country, but also the other thing to point out as well is that across the country it's working with experienced professionals. So there's there's the Access Sport in Liverpool with both Seven Elite Marine and the Stephen Gerrard Academy. There's the Smiths Boxing Academy as well in the Liverpool region. There's also Newcastle. There's Norwich, Lowestoft, Telford, Cumbria, Derby County, Marine. I've mentioned already. Morecambe, Rochdale, Sheffield. All of those are knocking around, but in all of them it's with experienced professionals, isn't it? Not just the idea of classroom learning.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, what we don't want to do is just to create, or what we've tried to not do is just to create another college, another classroom for students to come sit in, get a qualification that maybe they're not going to take any further than those 2 years. We've tried our best to try and work with industry professionals, you know, with whether it be local businesses, football clubs, you've named a few of them there. But anyone who can add value to that atypical classroom experience, take them students out of the classroom, give them industry experience, give them access to opportunities that they may not otherwise have, or they may not have if they just go to their, you know, the big, huge brick college in the middle of the city. No disrespect to them as well. So, yeah, locally, I think that's really important. Because we're a national provider, one of our weaknesses could be perceived to be that we've spread ourselves too thin. We try and, you know, overcome that by working with whether it be local football clubs or businesses, so they can really give them a flavour, the students a local flavour of what's available in the area.
When you're working with local businesses, for instance, you know, the Anfield app's included in that, and we've done work with both Seven Elite and with the Stephen Gerrard Academy at different phases in there. It is that idea, isn't it, of looking to partner on the local basis, you know, to take that further, the idea of looking to get real-world experience in as well at the same time. Real-world experience always, to me, feels a bit fusty, feels a bit old man, but what it actually means is showing people that actually workplaces aren't necessarily like that. You know, workplaces don't have to be that way round, that there's workplaces which do offer opportunities to young people for them to grow.
Yeah, and there's two sides to that coin. You know, you're looking to develop your business, you're looking for young people, you know, young talented people. You're looking to address maybe certain gaps in your business that there's maybe a skills gap in there. So we try and learn from you know, or try and develop our programs based on the feedback of our local employers and businesses. But likewise, you know, it's an opportunity for some of our local businesses or nationwide businesses to grow with our young students. So yeah, absolutely, it's not an old school placement thing where they go there for 2 weeks. It's about working for 2 years alongside various businesses, but particularly in that pathway to try and make sure that when they finish that course, they know exactly what the expectations are of a modern employer, of a modern business, and they know what their next steps need to be.
In terms of, I'll be really frank about this, because we've had a number of conversations when we're working out how we're going to do this, what we're going to talk about and all of that. Part of why we felt it's good for you to come to talk to us is because what we don't think at the Anfield Rap is, there's some, don't get me wrong, but we don't think we've got tons and tons of young people between the ages of, say, 14 and 18 listening. What we think we have listening is mothers, fathers, yeah, of young people, both men and women, it's worth pointing out, both young men and young women for these courses, uncles, friends, friends of families who may well be talking to people to say, you know, what someone's, you know, a sort of 16-year-old son or daughter going to do next in there. And that's what we want people to sort of be aware of, and that's what we're trying to spread the word of here, that this is something that's ongoing. It is nationwide. So what's the best next step? You know, if people wanted to register their interest, do some research, what's the best way to go about it into Access?
I mean, look, the website is fairly new. It's accesssport.ac.uk. We're on all of the various social media channels. Sorry, so if you search for Access Sport College, make sure you put college on the end, because there is a charity out there called Access Sport, so don't get caught up in that one. But yeah, listen, the website is informative. We will have a dedicated page, which will be TAW at the end of it, which will provide, I think, your listeners and your followers more relevant stuff, you know, similar to what we're talking about here. But it's accesssport.ac.uk. And yeah, look, I completely agree that what we're looking to try and do here is to try and, you know, develop a bit of trust amongst that generation, because I think our young people get a lot of information directly from us via our social media channels, via our open days, etc. But it's really important to us that we have the parents, that, you know, the uncles, the aunties, you know, their teachers, their coaches on board, and they understand that that we are a college to be trusted. And you know, we've just come through an Ofsted inspection, grade 2. So, you know, we have been judged, you know, good by Ofsted, and we want to get to outstanding, but we're only going to get there with the buy-in of businesses, with the buy-in of industry professionals, and with the buy-in of parents, and that's what we're looking to try and achieve.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much to Gary for coming in. So do check all of that out. It is available out there on the website, accesssport.ac.uk. If you do know someone or a family of someone who may well be interested in moving into that general direction, please do so. We'll be doing some work with Access over the next sort of 3 months or so that you'll hear through the Anfield Rap channels, but also hopefully in an ongoing sense as well, as part of the work that they're looking to do around sports media and so on and so forth. We're always happy to contribute to these things. We do it a number of different ways. It's always a pleasure to be able to support young people, and it's really, really pleasing for us to be able to work with Access in order to get their message out across the next few months. Do share that with us. Do spread that particular word. Thank you very much to Gary. And now back on with Tour Live. And if you are joining us live, you'll know that we are back. We are back. Loads of fantastic stuff, John, about Cody Gakpo all over the Anfield Rap app. As soon as that news broke, everyone came alive, it is fair to say. Loads of fantastic shows, loads of fantastic content about Cody Gakpo. We'll talk about him now in a second or two, but there was lots of brilliant stuff there for subscribers.
Yeah, there's loads on the app. If you haven't downloaded it yet, or you haven't had a look, just make sure you do, across audio and video. And I mean, you know, we're all just dead excited when Liverpool sign a new player, and we all want to know more about him. And so we make it our duty to find out, really. So we speak to as many different people as possible. You did something really good with Carl Anker, who'd researched him thoroughly, admittedly, because he thought he was going to Manchester United.
Yes.
But he was quite happy to share that information.
He was unbelievably kind about the whole thing, yeah, I felt, Carl.
Yeah. He basically did the best video I could see on Carl Anker. On Cody Gakpo. And so I did the Wimps thing and went, Neil, can you ask him to do something with us? And he said, yeah, he's written some really good for The Athletic as well. And so
he was happy, if not slight, tiny bit bitter, like maybe just a tiny bit.
But I enjoyed that as well.
That he's done all this content and then the fuck has just gone and signed somewhere.
It's helped the Anfield Rap. The Dutch stuff we got was excellent. I spoke to one journalist called Rick, who was literally in a car outside the PSV training ground.
Tremendous. It's going to be
exactly, yeah. So he had to put me back slightly. He said, sorry, I've just been in the PSV training ground, you know, finding out how they're all feeling. I was like, no, this is good. Nice one, sort of for that. So he was really good, and you know, all the stuff that came out of it was, you know, how well thought of he is by PSV, you know, as a person, as a human being, as well as a footballer. They all love him, they all really want him to do well, they're all delighted that, you know, he's got this move to Liverpool, because, you know, there's, I think some of the clubs in who he's linked with in the summer, they felt a little bit underwhelmed by, I think it is fair to say. And so the fact that, you know, he's going to a club who are competing for Champions Leagues and on a regular basis and stuff like that, like, they're made up for. So it feels like everyone's won, really, and especially us, because we've got this really exciting forward. There's loads on how he's going to play and you know, what kind of things he can bring to this team. And it certainly feels like a lot. So, yeah, love doing it all. And I know loads of people love listening to it as well. So, yeah, come and get excited with us.
Yep, download the app if you haven't already done so. You can listen to some of those shows, and there will be others should Liverpool sign another player. There's stuff in the comments around the midfield idea, whether or not Liverpool will go for Caicedo. A little bit of chat about Alexis McAllister. By the way, I could do one of those videos on Alexis McAllister that Carl Anker did. I've been all over McAllister for the longest time.
Oh, longer than Craig Hannon?
I think so, yeah. Craig was just excited by the name. You know what I mean? He's just sparkly, twinkly things get his attention. I'll do the in-depth picture on Alexis McAllister. Really, 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 really good. I'm intrigued. We'll talk about it now. Adam, are you surprised by Gakpo? The thing that most surprises me about Gakpo isn't the idea Liverpool have signed a forward, not a midfielder, which I think surprised some people, but those people haven't been paying attention. It's the fee. I'm surprised it was that low. You know, I can't believe it's 37 million plus add-ons. I suspect the add-ons will be relatively realistic add-ons, and also where Liverpool want to be, any add-on should be relatively realistic for a footballer with what's obviously Gakpo's talent. But I'm surprised Liverpool have managed to pick up a footballer of that talent who looks like he's got that ceiling for 37 million.
I think you just haven't given enough credit to the transfer nerds. Because this is not, we do it all the time. We get players for well cheap and sell really high. So I think, frankly, you're just being cruel to Julian Ward, who deserves more.
Well, the manager went out of his way to praise Julian Ward, I think, exactly. In his first line, which struck me as quite interesting.
Because he was probably like, oh, we'll get him about 60 million. And Ward came back and was like, I've done it 37. And we're giving them a bag of crisps and some Mars bars. And that's it, sorted. So I don't know what anyone's worth anymore. I think that's a big thing of why I'm almost not surprised at anything, because I don't know the value of players anymore. Ever since that Neymar thing happened, it just feels like everything's been blown wide open, and you could say a price for a player and I'd go, yeah, sounds about right. And especially because we're talking, so football is already fake. Like, football finance is already ludicrous and not real. Like, because you're talking millions of pounds for a human being. So it's already insane. So I just don't know what any of it means. And I don't, because we don't know kind of what he's on, like, wages wise either. We don't really have any inkling of that. So they could have paid 37 million for him, but he's on 600,000 a week. I just don't know. I haven't got a clue. So I'm not shocked by the price, because there are a few. I think it was Paul Tompkins has tweeted out just before about a bunch of players that were in that same kind of price bracket. And right now, we don't know how well or otherwise Gakpo is going to settle into the Premier League. It might be that it's a bit like Salah, where in a year's time, we're all turning around and going, we have absolutely had their pants down over that transfer. That's an unbelievable fee. It might be one when we're all going, yeah, 40 million is about right for what he's actually produced on the pitch. I just don't know. I'm excited though, because I'm looking forward to finding out, especially because I'm, you know, I'm a glass half full sort of person.
Famously
so, unless you ask my wife. I think he's going to have a really good impact, because I just, you know, love footballers. Why not? They're all great.
I mean, they are mostly great, Harriet. This one looks especially useful from a Liverpool point of view. I can see a few little tactical shifts that could suit him. Again, in the context of watching what Oxlade-Chamberlain does against Aston Villa, it's very easy to see off the profile that Gakpo has got how he could perform that role and be able to offer significantly more threat than Oxlade-Chamberlain. There's the idea of him being able to play, I think, maybe at the apex of a diamond with Nunez and Salah, being able to play between fullback and centre-back in there. It wouldn't surprise me if next season, once he's had a bit of time around conditioning and pressing, if you occasionally saw him drop back into midfield as one of the two eights. I think that versatility will be part of why I think Liverpool were happy to pull the trigger. In the short term, I think he's going to be featuring interchanging firstly with Nunez, secondly, hopefully when he gets back with Jota, and thirdly, possibly with Diaz, interchanging both on the pitch and on and off the pitch onto the bench to make sure Liverpool have constantly got threat off that left-hand side, moving into the centre with Salah on the right.
Yeah, I think there's a few things with him. I think for the short term, obviously, a lot of people are saying, why have we signed another left-sided forward? And I understand that. But to be honest, I'll come on to that in a minute. But for the short term, obviously, we've not got Diaz, we've not got Jota. He can hopefully slot in there. And I think we all have to accept it is going to take him a bit more time to adapt. He'll be used in the Dutch league to having a lot more time on the ball. He'll be able to cut through defences a bit more easily. And hopefully, you know, it won't take him too long to do that. But I think in the short term, he'll probably get a lot of game time and have a lot of time to really quickly adapt to the style in the Premier League. And then in the long term, he's young enough to be able to be moulded to exactly where Klopp and the manager sees him fitting in the system. And I wonder whether, if you look at some of his assist stats and how creative he is at actually feeding into forwards, that is in a more of a 10 role or a more of a midfield role rather than actually playing as an out-and-out forward. So I think he's really versatile. And, you know, it's always funny when everyone's like, sign a player, sign a player, sign a player, and then you sign a player and they're like, we didn't need that kind of player in that position. And actually, you see that he does a lot more than that. But what I like the most about him, what I'm most excited about from listening to the content from who you guys have spoken to, is that he seems so meticulous in his development and so sort of keen to learn and to be able to improve himself in every area of the game and really want to pay attention to detail in all those areas. Sorry if you can hear the dogs barking, by the way. The joys of being at home over Christmas. But yeah, I like the kind of character that he is on and off the pitch. I like the direction that he seems to want to go in for himself. So, yeah, he's a very exciting prospect.
Harriet's too modest there. They're more hounds than they are dogs.
And also the comments are really distracting today. Like, everyone's absolutely mad.
Everyone's getting stuck That's in. It's excellent stuff. Note. It's good to see. GLFC says some of the stick Nunez gets from our own fan base is shocking. Well, what I would say to that GLFC is those people need to shut the fuck up. They are just wrong. Do not pay any attention to them. Take no notice of those people. That's one of the comments that's come through as we've been going here, John. I feel as though the other thing that adds to his idea of his versatility, especially in this league, and this is a crucial point for me, is that he is absolutely fucking massive. So I'm not expecting to play midfield between now and the end of the season. There's people losing the shit in the comments around that. I'm really not. I'm just saying that might be something they work on over the summer as an option for certain home games. The idea of being able to play with four attackers and Gakpo's the one who does his work the deepest would not surprise me. That is not, I'll be clear, the same as saying it will happen. It would not surprise me if it did. But what I like and why I think he can add some versatility in there and what I think is important is that he is, in the words of Pete Selby, who did some work on the World Cup watching Holland, an absolute unit. And that is the sort of thing Liverpool could do with more of.
Yeah, although it's interesting when you're speaking to people and they say he could do with sort of bulking up a little bit more. So I imagine he's going to be introduced to the AXA Weight Club, which is, you know, obviously Mo Salah's the president.
Yeah,
of Sadio Mane,
dearly departed member.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, honorary life vice president Sadio Mane, and obviously, you know, they recruit well, and I think they'll maybe have a bit of a chat with him if that is the case, and if he needs to sort of bulk up a little bit. You know, it was interesting, you know, hearing people speak about, you know, maybe he could do with his working on his strength, sort of back to the goal. So what I'm saying is, I don't think he's going to be one like, you know, like Amane, where he's barging people out the way and stuff like that. But I think, you know, his size obviously will be another thing that will help us in terms of, you know, set pieces and stuff like that. And so, and then if he can bulk up a little bit and be a more physical, you know, presence for us, then brilliant. But I just love, you know, everyone's talked about how cleanly he strikes a ball, and I'm looking forward to seeing that for the first time.
I'm really intrigued by this chat about how cleanly he strikes a ball.
Because all footballers are good at kicking it.
Yeah, so what makes him this good?
He's also left foot, right foot and header in the World Cup, and I just love that he's got all of that in his locker. It's going to be lovely, isn't it?
Well, how clean is it, Harriet?
It's going to be so clean, so amazing.
Yeah. We're going to hear the whistle.
Just as a side note, I love these kind of things. Liverpool have already removed their pin tweet, so what's coming next? That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, I was going to say a couple of rounds of that. We've not got a lot of time. I want to, because John's got to go to the Rock and Roll Panto for one, and I am conscious of that. I want to circle back around to a new player. All I've now got in my head is So Fresh, So Clean by Outkast, with reference to how Cody Gakpo is going to strike the ball. And maybe we should start to come out of that and get rid of finally You'll Never Walk Alone. But one day I'll get my wish. Regardless, what you want from him, Adam, I think, is just in the short term. He obviously can't play against Leicester. I expect to see him play some part against Brentford, and he's going to find out quickly what big lads are if he does play against Brentford. There's an FA Cup game coming up against Wolves. It would be nice to see. I don't think, I'm not asking for him to settle and absolutely hit the ground running, but it would be nice to see him feature, nice to see him find his feet a little bit, nice to see him get used to play with his teammates.
I think we got a little bit spoilt by how quickly Luis Diaz settled, and I think it's important, and actually to some extent Darwin Nunez as well, as you know, settled relatively quickly. So I think we all will need to maybe have a little bit of patience and remember that it's actually normal for players to take quite a while to bed in. What we need him to do right now is not be terrible like that. That would be a real bonus, you know, if he can come in and just be neat and tidy, hit the ball nice and clean and crisp, and with his passing and his shooting and his crossing, that will be great. If he doesn't come in and is like, let's just not pass for him for a while because he's taking too long on the ball and all that, then that will be a really good thing, I think. Obviously, if we get goals, assists on top of that, that's a bonus. But I think it's also worth remembering, this Liverpool team is set up predominantly, or at least is starting to look a little bit like it's settled predominantly to get the best out of Mo Salah. You were talking about it on, a couple of different shows, but certainly the main show, I think, about if you've got Nunez there and defenders are having to worry about Nunez, then Salah is being left alone. If you're doubling up on Salah, then you've got Nunez left alone. So it's not that he needs to come in and necessarily be banging the ball in the back of the net. But what he does need to do is be occupying people. So if he can look a threat and occupy players, then that will leave room for other people. And that will be really, really nice.
Want to move on, Harriet. You mentioned that Liverpool have unpinned the pinned tweet, which makes people think there might be a new player, and it's interesting that there's loads of Moses Caicedo chat. I want to be on record now saying I hope Liverpool do not buy Caicedo, it'll drive me mad. Right. Because why just fucking get him in the first place? Why has he got to go and play 6 months in Brighton? Drives me mad. Just buy him. Get him when he was in Ecuador, because they were watching him then, supposedly. So all this, you're hang on, he'll go to Brighton for 60 million.
So you were saying Fernando Fernandes then?
Sorry. I'm irritated by Enzo Fernandez as well. Yeah, we should have got Enzo Fernandez then as well. We should have done one of them. I'm sick of the hanging on thing. It just drives me a bit mad. And by the way, and if this football club pays more than 60 million quid for a lad who doesn't score goals, I'll also be pretty livid about that.
It's mad how midfielders have become the most expensive people.
Well, but I think that's all press. So I think the Enzo Fernandez thing is it's all Benfica who don't really want to sell him because they're going to win. They should be winning their league. And also they're in the last 16 of the Champions League. They're playing really well and they've got Bruges in the last 16. So I think Benfica, the reason why they keep pushing, this is the fee, is because they're like, well, we would take 120 million.
Well, they're going to have to because it's the release clause.
What I mean. That's why they're saying that's the release clause. But actually, they don't really want to sell him because they want to say that that's the fee. So then if Fernandes gets a bit pissed off because a number of big clubs want him now, I think what Benfica want to be able to say is, listen, you've got this release clause. You need to crack on and get back playing with us because we can win the European Cup. Because I think Benfica think they could win the European Cup. So I think all of that's the thing. So it's all the noise is Benfica's side and Benfica are trying to set that fee. Similarly with the Brighton players, all the noise comes out, it's Brighton side saying this is how much it'll cost. We're a Premier League club, we don't need to give these lads away. They just got 60 million for Cucurella in the summer from Chelsea. He was a left back, for God's sake. So I think that they're thinking to themselves, well, we don't want to give these lads away as well. My argument here is, well, maybe just, you know, what are our South American scouts saying about who's the next one? I think there's an argument to just go and buy the next one, as far as I'm concerned, with the exception of Bellingham, for whom I would give everything up to and including my own internal organs, if that helps. If someone in the Bellingham family is knocking around and could do with a kidney, we can lash it in as part of the deal. I mean, the blood group would have to be right and we'll go from there. But yeah,
I'm very... Who though are you going to get in a January transfer window? Because you're not going to get Bellingham in January, that's clear. So who is a... And I think we do need a midfielder before summer.
I think we possibly need a midfielder before summer. One of the things that Gakpo does is it throws back in the idea of Chamberlain being able to feature in midfield. I know everyone's going to be absolutely desperate.
Everyone's going to fume at that.
Yeah, but I think that you just end up in a situation where, you know, the idea of setting certain benchmarks as to what you'll pay for players as well, I think is important. There'll be lads who are available. I mean, you know, we're coming up to play up against Leicester and they've got a midfielder who's very highly rated and has been very highly rated for some time, who's out of contract next summer. He's knocking around the place still, Tielemans as an example. And I don't think it'd take more than 20 million now to get Tielemans out of Leicester as an example. There's loads of footballers. this is one of my big things, is there's loads of footballers and you want to get the right character. But I just sort of, I think with Caicedo, I think it just feels like such a bust missed. And with Fernandez, I just feel a little bit like, at the minute, I think Benfica just really want to keep him or get so much money, they won't even know what to do with it.
It'd be better than winning the European Cup.
Well, it probably would be as much money as you would get for winning the European Cup if you're Benfica. And I think that that's the major thing. Can't be honest with Amrabat either, he's a crab. Go on.
If it helps, Neil, I don't think that we'll get the fella from Brighton because there's only room in the squad for one player whose name we can't pronounce, and Bacatic is taking that. No problem. He sealed that off. So yeah, there's no way we're getting another one.
He's done a great job in there. Who do you think we're going to sign, Harriet?
Who do I think we're going to sign?
Yeah.
Oh, well, in January. Because I'm not gonna lie to you, I have absolutely no idea. But I just do feel like there's gonna be a midfielder coming in. I just don't sense now that they'll have brought in a forward and then thought, okay, that's all we need for this window, when there has been predominantly problems in the first half of the season in the midfield area. And I just get the impression, especially with him bringing youngsters in and relying on them. And obviously, yeah, they've done a good job and they've been fine and they've come on and scored in the last game. But I just don't sense that that's
I think they'll buy a midfielder.
Ideal situation.
I think they'll buy a midfielder. So
to be honest, I don't know. But then I didn't expect Gakpo to come and join Liverpool because I always thought he was going to go to United. So I think it's probably going to be one of those where we end up being surprised. But I don't think it's going to be Enzo Fernandez, because like you mentioned, I just think Benfica are going to keep on wanting to put the price up, and they're not going to want to sell at this stage of the season. So I don't think that's
8 points clear at the top of the league, and they're in the last 16 of the Champions League, and they play against Club Brugge. And
yeah, someone said you've made zero recommendations. I know I've made zero recommendations. Sorry.
I love McAllister at Brighton, but I think mid-season Brighton go, we don't want to sell McAllister, we're 8th at the minute.
I'm going to stick up for Harriet here and say it's hard because Neil is on one.
I know. I feel like
he's basically called eight really good midfielders shite, and then God, who do you think we should buy, Harriet? Come on.
And then he's already ruled out, so I'm struggling here, I'm not going to lie. I do, yeah, he's an option.
Say his name for the podcast people, Harriet.
I think it's Frankie de Jong.
Frankie de Jong, yeah.
There we go.
I think he would be interesting at this point if we're doing everything it looks like we're doing. I think he'd be interesting.
I think he would be, because I think he's also quite a versatile midfielder, isn't he? And that he can play the more defensive role, he can play more of a box-to-box role. And I feel like, but there was just such a saga with him in the summer, whether what his future was going to look like. He really wanted to stay. He didn't want to come to the Premier League. If he wanted to, he would have come earlier. Maybe just didn't want to go to United because that's what he was linked with. So we'll see. But yeah. I'd like him. Would you not be slaughtering him, Neil?
No, I quite like De Jong. I mean, I'm not slaughtering any. I'm more slaughtering the idea of Caicedo goes for very little money, does 6 months at Brighton, and then he's worth an absolute fortune, and Liverpool fall for that gag. Would sort of do me head a little bit if we were watching.
I think sometimes you don't know what they're going to perform like in the Premier League, and also what they're going to perform like against this opposition until they're in it. And you can't just rule out signing all players from the Premier League because they've only done
somewhere else
first.
But it is only 6 months, and as I say, I do sort of think you've got to, like, if they sign Caicedo, I'd rather they just sign the next Caicedo, if that makes sense. Like, I'd rather we just took a risk and got a lad in for 8 million, off the basis of the fact that we've got eight other midfielders plus that lad Artur,
who I will point out to everyone. Like, you can say the next him, but he's 21 years old. He could be, you know, yeah, he's only been there 6 months, but he could be anything. And if he's a player they see potential in and has already got a little bit of Premier League experience under his belt, then I'm kind of on board with it.
I can see why people are. I just think there'll be the next ones of these, because I think what Ajax have done really, really well, and it's a line Rory uses, Ajax are happy to sell a number of players, and one of the reasons why is because they just know that footballers, it's not a finite resource, there's going to be more. And so I'd rather take a bit of a risk on one more at this point in the middle of the park, given everyone else who we've currently got, and see if someone can come in and contribute. And I'd rather do the gamble than do the 60 million thing, because 60 million in of itself is a gamble. If you run through the list of the all-time most expensive midfielders, and 60 million have put you pretty close to being in the all-time most expensive midfielders, about 7 of the 10 can be deemed failures. So I think if you're suddenly going to start lashing in there, that's the, you know, the fourth most expensive midfielder of all time in the Premier League is Naby Keita. That's the, and he was 52 million. So if you start doing 60 million, what's your end product around that? What is it that you actually think that you're going to get?
But then what do you think you're going to get from Tielemans? Because I like him and I like watching him in Leicestershire. I'm not against him, but then I think he's sort of reached his ceiling. And if you're talking about buying the next thing, I don't think he is particularly that.
No, I don't think he is either. I'm not necessarily that big a fan, but I think what we're looking to buy here, I think, and I could be wrong, because I think we're going to do three midfielders in the next two windows, is I think we're looking for Liverpool's fifth best midfielder once all of that's shaken out. And I think that's what we should sort of look for in this window, is Liverpool's fifth best midfielder, and then look to sort of shake up with Bellingham and one other as it wears on. That's my sort of thought process. So if Tielemans comes in and he becomes Liverpool's fifth best midfielder, now Tielemans would want massive wages. He's going for a free, so he's not necessarily that good an example. But that's why I'm happier to see them take a bit more of a gamble on someone a little bit cheaper, maybe someone who is coming from a not a top five league, someone who's a little bit more of a risk, and see how they get on in there as well, because that's sort of where I end up sort of logically following it through. But I could be wrong. They may well do Caicedo, and he may go on to have the most fantastic Liverpool career anyone's ever conceived of, and everyone would say after the fact, what was the 55 million for there? Didn't we do ever so well? And go from there. I like McAllister a lot, and I think you could possibly get him in the summer. I don't think Brighton would want to sell any of them now, and that's why you'd have to pay top whack, whereas you could possibly get some of these lads a bit more reasonable in the summer, and that's sort of where we end up. Adam, what do you think we're going to do?
I didn't really get Bellingham.
This January?
I genuinely do. And I think the...
Really?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, you say really, like I've got any fucking clue what I'm talking about. But yeah, I do. And the reason why is that I think there'll be conversations going on of how much is he going to cost in the summer? How much would we have to pay to get Fernandes now? And I agree with all of Neil's argument to say it's 120 million. So how much are you going to spend to get Bellingham in the summer? Why not just spend that now and get him? Why not spend, say, 120 million if that's what it's going to cost? Like, if we're going to get a top-class midfielder, and for the people at Liverpool, it's between Bellingham and Fernandes, then you're saying, well, you were paying 120 million for Fernandes. What would Dortmund accept that right now for Bellingham? Yes, I think they would, personally. There's also these rumours of this, like, 60 million release clause that only comes into effect in the summer or something, which might be complete nonsense, because normally these things are. But if there's anything like that going on, then Liverpool also get to say to Dortmund, you're only going to... I know you might want to hold on and get him in sell him in the summer, but if you do that, you're going to get less than we're offering you now. So I think there is lots of logic to say, he's our number one target. We've got the money. Let's just get him now. That's my thing. It will probably turn out to be nonsense, but I've just got an instinct that they're going to go big.
Arthur Melo is the sixth or seventh most expensive midfielder of all time in the move that moved him from Juventus to Barcelona. The sixth or seventh most expensive midfielder of all time, sorry, from Barcelona to Juventus. 76 million was what Melo cost in order to make that move. And I mean, you know, isn't that startling? Isn't that worth bearing in mind when we talk about the way in which the fees get lashed around the place? We need to move forward. We need to talk at least briefly about this game that's coming up against Leicester. John, Leicester are rubbish. That was a shock, wasn't it? 2-0 down at home against Newcastle after 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was a real shock, really, because they sort of finished quite well, didn't they? You know, they looked like they got their act together, so they looked like they were going to be a team who would approach this period quite well, but no, didn't. And yeah, It's a strange one. I think Rodgers was a bit taken aback with it. I watched his interview after the game, and I think he was expecting to be much better. I mean, Newcastle are obviously flying at the moment and are full of confidence and look a bit of a nightmare to play against in every regard, in that they don't concede any goals.
No, they stopped doing that, which is a bit annoying.
Yeah, so they could, you know, and then also, you know, all the stuff to do, you know, all the energy they've got, you know, at the top of the pitch. And so they're a very difficult team to play against at the moment, and we're going to cause everyone a bit of a nightmare, but it was a little bit too easy. And every type of goal and set pieces and stuff like that as well that they've conceded a lot from and in sort of soft ways. And so, yeah, it remains problems there, and hopefully they're ones that Liverpool can exploit.
They just don't look in good nick at all. No Maderson for this one, Harriet. There'll be no Johnny Evans either. Nodder, sadly, unavailable for this. So they're going to have to find themselves a way of playing against Liverpool. Now, listen, last season we thought they were a bit of a bag of rags when we went there around this time of year, and Liverpool had every chance to take the game away from Leicester in the first half, failed to do so. Leicester won the game. It's one of the worst days of my life. There is, you know, we can't be complacent about this, therefore, but this is a side that, to me, what they've got at the back Amate will probably play centre half. They've got Luke Thomas, who's quite a raw left back, who's going to feature for them. There's a lot of onus in there on Castagne to be half decent. I think Liverpool need to start with the same intensity as they did against Aston Villa.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, what I will say is I watched Nottingham Forest the other day and I was thinking, how the hell did we get beat by these? So I definitely think it's a situation where you can't take anything for granted. Obviously, the fact that Maddison is out is a huge blow for them, but a big win for us, because I think everything sort of goes through him. And when he's playing, they're a completely different team. So him being out doesn't aid them in any way whatsoever. And they just look a little bit, when they played Newcastle, just a team a bit devoid of confidence, devoid of ideas, sort of lacking in any real shape. So I think Liverpool need to take advantage of that, come out really, really strong, especially in that first 15 like they did against Villa, and just take advantage of the lack of confidence. Thank you for the compliment on the beam.
So it looks low. He's worried about it, Dougie. You might hit your head.
It's not low. Nothing's going to hit my head. And everyone spells my name with a no. It's with an E, just as a side note. I'm excited for the Leicester game. But yeah, definitely come out strong in that first 45 minutes and make sure that we've got more confidence than they have, and just score a few early goals so that we're not panicking in 60 minutes in the second half like we were against Villa.
60 minutes in the second half. There was a degree of panicking amongst it all, Adam. I think this is a game Liverpool can kill, and that isn't, again, to show complacency or anything like that. I think that's almost what we want to go to Anfield and see on Friday. We'd all just take any win from now until the end of the season in every game. But it's an opportunity, I think, for the Reds to show a little bit of something. I would like to have one of those December nights that you occasionally get at Anfield, where you get to enjoy a football match and relax a little bit. I think that is possible. I don't think it's inevitable. What do we do to make it inevitable?
I think score early. I think that's one of the key things, because I think Leicester will be feeling a little bit fragile. I think one of my best friends is a Leicester fan, and I went away on a golf weekend with a load of his family who were all Leicester fans. And this is in August, I think. And they basically were all saying they wanted Rodgers out. I think they'd lost like two or three games in a row and they wanted Rodgers out. It's not that long since Leicester were absolutely the crisis club in the Premier League. Then it's not like the players are sort of all rallying round, because they got beat 3-0 at the weekend, didn't they? So, you know, at home as well, wasn't it? I don't think it's the biggest thing in the world that you're saying, can Liverpool put a couple past them in the first half an hour and just everyone goes, yeah, we're fine here, including the Leicester players, by the way, who were just like, meh, we're fine. We're not going to get relegated. We're not going to win the league. We'll just bumble along until either they change the manager or something random, you know, or particularly exciting happens with the playing squad. So I think score early, score a couple in the first half an hour, and I think it'll be a relatively comfortable night.
Do you think you'll make any changes, John?
No. I don't, actually. I don't.
Same.
I think he'll go with what he's got. I don't think there's a clear argument to be made to sort of do anything, really. He Keita plays well, so he might think, well, you know, could it give him either this one or Brentford? It might be sort of an option, but that's the only one I could think of, really. I sort of suspect he'll stick with what he went with last time.
Do you think he'll make any changes, Harriet?
No, I don't think he'd make any changes. I think the only one that he potentially would make would be, would Konate maybe come back in? He's be the only
I
one
think Konate probably gets Brentford. I don't think he'll have trained yet. I mean, the manager's doing his press conference in a minute and we'll find out, but I think Konate is possibly still a training session.
Maybe Carvalho, but we'll see.
For Chamberlain?
Yeah.
Okay, do you think he'll make any changes, Adam?
No, I don't. I'm not convinced at the idea that he's going to put Keita in, because I would not be shocked if part of the manager putting Keita on the pitch when he has been is a little bit of a shop window thing. And I think he'll be very wary that if you put somebody in a shop window, you don't play them to the point that they can get injured, which with Keita can be any moment. So I think Keita's minutes will be limited until and unless the window shuts. That's my instinct.
Okay, excellent stuff indeed. John, what's the panto?
Don't know.
Oh, that's a shame. It's the everyman. I mean, you're certain of the quality is what I would say.
Yeah, no, we go every year. I never know what I'm going to watch. It doesn't really matter.
Oh, it does, because you've got to get excited about whatever it is. I hope it's Jack and the Beanstalk.
I would say the script and jokes are the same regardless. The cast is the same. The jokes are the same. The songs vary a little bit, but not massively. And so, yeah, it's just slightly different set, I would say. So that is why I'm so relaxed.
Oh, no, it isn't.
See.
Excellent stuff all round. John has got that to look forward to this afternoon, and then tomorrow afternoon he gets to go to Anfield. When he gets there, it will be something special indeed. But thank you very much to Harry Pryor, to John Gibbons, to Adam Smith, Gary Judge earlier on in the show, Andy Heaton for being in the general vicinity of everything that's ongoing. I'm wrapping it up now, and
the panto,
what is it?
Rock and Roll Red Riding Hood.
It's Rock and Roll Red Riding Hood. That's excellent to know.
Wow,
and John is dressed absolutely brilliantly. Rock and Roll Red Riding Hood, and that is a red top for the ages from John Gibbons. They should put that in the dressing room before kickoff on Friday. Liverpool will win 5-0. Come and adore them. They are the kings of Europe. See you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.